You're listening to WCOM LP Chapel Hill and Carrboro. Carrboro's new voice to its community.
To get started with the Aging Well Together show, and for folks that are listening to us live, that was so great. The late, wonderful Reverend Robert Seymour just did the call letters. Okay, here we're going to lower that background music. I am so excited for today's show. I'm always excited, but today is super wonderful. We have a great show planned. I have a friend and a colleague here. A longtime community leader, we have Barbara Jessie Black, president and CEO of Community Works, based right here in Carrboro. So excited to dive into, woo, woo, woo. I know we're not using the, all right, I'm going to do it. Wait, where's the, there we go. We have a sound machine. It's so silly, Barbara. It's ridiculous. And so excited to dive into. Barbara has a wonderful, her motivations and her mission and her passion and learning about Community Works and so many ways for all of us to get involved. But as always, before we dive into what we're going to learn together, we want to give a shout out to WCOM LP Chapel Hill Carrboro for hosting our weekly Aging Well Together show. You can catch our show every Thursday from 2 to 3 on 103.5 FM. Or you can stream us live for those of you who are not within the mile radius of wherever our antenna is. And you can stream us live through WCOMFM.org. Or you can catch any of our previous shows, our podcasts. Alicia, this is show 72. We are deep. Wow. We are aging well together. Good. Even the show is aging well together. Wow. Our wonderful show is brought to you by the always helpful team at the Orange County Department on Aging. Besides being our wonderful sponsors, our expert guests on the show, and we've got a stream slew of them coming in end of March, beginning of April, depending on our move to our new studio. But we've got this, the Aging Transitions team, we have the social work team, we have the occupational therapist team coming on soon. But besides all of that, we have wonderful Marilyn, the communications manager, who posts all of our shows, those podcasts I mentioned, on the Orange County Department on Aging's website. So if you want to catch up on any of our previous 71 shows, they are all up. You can go to Orange County Department on Aging's website, which is orangecountync.gov/aging. Remember, you have to add the NC, orangecountync.gov/aging. And besides links for our Aging Well Together radio show, there are so many other helpful resources on their website. So please check them out. If you want to go old school and pick up the phone and call the Orange County Department on Aging because you have any questions, you can give them a call at 919-968-2070. And if you have any questions about our shows or want to suggest a topic, feel free to email me, email us at, and here's our long email address, agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com. All one word, agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com. Excited to be, we have so many shows planned and we've had to be careful about it because ideally in the next few weeks we're moving to our new studio.
Well,
in the Drakeford Library.
I had a lot of people last week ask about Heather.
Oh, ask about me or ask about our show?
And the show.
I know, it's going to be exciting. We're going to be at a new place and we'll see what happens even though we're in a fishbowl here with windows, I wish people could see it. Our quirky cave that is the current studio has been emptied out. So if you look, all the CDs are gone. Every time we come, something is missing. I know. So we're super excited. Hopefully mid-April, we'll be coming to you from the new Drakeford Library. You can come and wave to us from the windows.
I know, or call us.
Or call us. I know. We haven't been pushing the call in.
We're going to have to get a segment for calls. Then I'll call you.
But what if nobody calls?
I'll call you.
What, could you go in the other room and pick up a cell phone? All right, yes. We have a call-in capacity now, but it makes us nervous. So you can call in more in a few weeks. You heard just a moment of our original opening music from the Carbro Bass Band, the Robert Bradford Quartet. I closed it really quickly, talked over them. At the end of the show, you'll be able to hear a lot more from them. Thank you, Robert Bradford Quartet, for allowing us to use your great music. As you heard, Alicia Reed is back with us, fresh from either teaching a class. She's one of the extraordinary...
I change in the car while driving.
You look very nice. So one of the wonderful wellness instructors with the Orange County Department on Aging. She is also just such a community volunteer. Whispered to Barbara. I didn't whisper it. I just said it to Barbara at the end of the show. I'm sure Alicia will be volunteering with something with
Community
Works.
This week I'm actually doing Orange County Government Academy.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. Wow. Because you're already an ombudsman.
Right.
You're not an ombudsman. Okay. You're part of the advisory.
That's right. Stop it. Okay, stop there. Let's talk about.
Okay. Okay. All right. Anyway, Alicia, every group, even every commission we've had on, Alicia was like, I was on that, or I'm currently with that. Or
I have a lot of personality, so I have to, you know, address them all.
And a lot of energy.
A lot of energy. All right.
At 66.
You're 66 now. Did I miss your birthday?
It's okay.
Oh, gosh. You were 65 the last time we checked.
I just turned 62, so.
Oh. Yay. Oh, my goodness. Well, happy birthday to both of you. Alicia, I got to figure out. You never tell me when your birthday is. I got to figure this out. I'll just do a quick shout out for me if people haven't figured out. I'm Heather Altman. Uh-huh. I am your host. I've spent over 25 years working in aging services and supports. I help older adults and their families connect with resources in our community. I am a caregiver for older family members. I am 54, and so I am focusing on my own changing needs and how we are all aging well together. Okay. Super excited. I want to turn to our guests. Again, so excited. Barbara and I go back many years now, longtime mm-hmm. friend and colleague. Mm-hmm. So exciting. She runs the Community Works. I'm excited for Barbara to share her passion about nonprofit work and how nonprofit organizations search for innovative ways to achieve socioeconomic communities. And I know she's going to talk a lot about her youth work, but we will connect it across the generations. I already warned Barbara, I did some stalking and saw that beyond community work, Barbara is active in both the communities in which she lives and works by serving on several boards and volunteering her time to causes close to her heart, which include workforce and economic development, access to healthcare, issues of equity, diversity, and inclusion, as well as other issues in the social justice space. I am including this part that I saw because I knew Alicia would be extra excited about this. Barbara considers herself a lifelong student of all things holistic and spiritual, ooh, with emphasis on how those concepts influence one's activism. Yeah, uh-huh. I see Alicia's like, I found my person. I'll just say she is fluent in German. She'll explain why. I know the story, but you get to all hear it. She is a yoga enthusiast and includes in her spiritual practice daily meditation and annual silent retreats. Alicia, right? I knew you would love that. Welcome, Barbara, to the Aging Well Together show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really love this space. I haven't been in WCOM space in probably, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years.
Wow. Yeah.
So pre-COVID. And I just love it. It's such a cute little quirky space. So yeah. I'm hoping that
I like it.
That's what
that
we
your
are.
New space is going to be
Alicia
a
and I are cute
too.
And quirky. It is.
Heather
we
has
have
seen
to
it.
Quirk
I
it
have,
up.
You haven't seen it.
We have to quirk it up. There are glass windows so people can pass by as they're going to like glass
half full.
No, glass half full. It's the Open Eye Cafe on that side. So we're on the kind of side street. So we definitely want people to wave in. It looks very normal right now, but I have true belief in the team of WCOM, our quirky co-hosts and station managers and team
for the things.
To quirk it up because it doesn't have the kind of flair, but I feel like within a few moments we'll make it our own.
Okay, we'll rehome it.
Well,
yeah,
and if
we do
you're
love
and
it
if
here.
You if you're lacking for quirkiness, just come across to the thrift shop. You
I
will
there,
find some quirkiness
I know,
that you
see.
Can add to your
There's
new space.
A thrift shop there?
Well, not too far away, and that's
around
what we're
the
gonna.
Well,
oh,
up
I know,
the street
I know.
In this sort of general colloquial around the corner. All right, there's so much to get into about the thrift shop and about Community Works, but Barbara, I know, has a fascinating past. So as always, we like to start here. Tell us all about you and your background and how you got so motivated to make a difference.
Oh, gosh. No pressure at all, right?
Radio show / therapy.
Tell us about you. So I will start off by saying that equity, diversity, and inclusion, although I hate the whole DEI moniker.
Well, good, because we're not supposed to use it anymore.
But I am actually a product of that. My mother was German. My mother's now deceased. My father is black from Texas. And I was born in 1963 in Berlin, Germany. Half of my family still lives in Germany. So I have the idea that German was my first language, and also I'm fluent in German.
Isn't that so cool?
Apparently not fluent in English, though, but as I'm sort of puttering along.
Feel free to break out into German. Yeah, we'll just go,
So I'm fluent.
Just to give them a shout-out, because I know they're listening.
I will do that. I hate it when people say that, right? Because it's like, I'm not sure what to say, but it'll come naturally in a few minutes.
Okay.
So, and my parents were married, if you all are familiar with The Loving Decision, 1967. Mm-hmm. My parents were actually married 10 days before that decision was made here in the U.S. Yeah. My parents were married in Berlin, Germany June 2nd, and The Loving Decision was made on June 12th.
Mm. Does that mean they could not get married? There could be an interracial marriage.
Correct. Yeah. Depending on where you were in the States, but sort of, nationally, it was not accepted. All that to say is that the idea of social justice and equity, I come by that. It goes with my face, so to speak, right? I mean, it is how I was raised. It is how I was birthed. I mean, all of it together. So having said that, I spent the first 17 years of my life in Germany as a military brat. And I always say that you never age out of the military bratness, right? Mm-hmm. So if you are once a military brat, you're always a military brat. And I'll share this really quick story because I think it's kind of funny. So I'm on Threads. I don't know if you all are mm-hmm. on. Okay, so.
I follow so many other social media things.
Right, it is, I will say, it's, as far as social media goes, it is a fun social media platform to be a part of.
Oh, gosh.
I don't know if you all remember when J.D. Vance went to, not J.D. Vance, Hegseth. When he went to Stuttgart, and the students, the middle school students, in Stuttgart on the base walked out.
Oh, I did not know that. Is that recently?
Yeah, that was a month or two ago, maybe a month and a half ago.
Did not know that.
So anyway, so the funny story for me is that that is so quintessential how military brats move. Right. I mean, that is sort of our, and there were a whole bunch of, that's why they call this Threads. There were a whole bunch of us on Threads who were talking about this, who were older military brats and who were like, yeah, this is how we move as students and as as people who are engaged in the global in the global environment in which we live, and we're we don't mess about, so to speak, right? And so to see that in 2025, mm-hmm. and then to have lived some of that as a middle schooler in the 70s. It was just, it was
relate.
Brilliant.
Was it related?
Right? It was just, right? Yeah, it was, I totally could relate to it.
So, because it was the expat, the military, this was a military school with Americans abroad.
Correct.
And speaking out.
Yeah, and speaking out and making a statement and not being afraid to make that statement. So, yeah. So, anyway, I share that just because it's sort of my growing up years in Germany and even, as I came to the States, the younger part of my life really has informed how I move just generally, right? I mean, I am clear about, what my passions are around causing, making sure that I cause no harm in how I move with people. That is the whole premise behind, Community Works. And I would argue, too, the idea of, the organization started off as PTA Thrift Shop to close an opportunity gap And that gap was there wasn't an art program in the schools, mm-hmm. right? And so, you know, my argument always is that, you know, we as an organization, we're 73 years old. We've moved through, you know, a variety of phases, not just community phases, but also national phases, right? From the 50s all the way to now. And so the organization has evolved. And with it, we continue to do the thing that is most important, and that is close opportunity gaps and cause the least amount of harm. Mm-hmm. And so for me personally, that's how I move through the world. I mean, the notion of not wanting people to, because I'll say, let me stop babbling and say.
Oh, you're not babbling. I'm so into
this. We're all connected, and I think people mm-hmm. forget that, right? This idea, and this is the upshot of growing up overseas, right? You are the system in which we grew up, even though it was the, you know, Department of Defense system, still you were part of the local economy. And so locally, Europeans move differently. They move as one could argue it's a socialistic kind of environment, which mm-hmm. it is, but that's not a bad thing. Europeans understand that we are all connected in some form or fashion. And so if I have, you have. Mm-hmm. In the U.S., we're finding that is not how we move.
We're much more individualistic.
Exactly.
And that mm-hmm. this somewhere along the way that... Because, yeah, if you use the word socialistic, it's like, oh, well, then it gets into something. But it's like that sense of connectedness,
right.
No, whereas in the U.S., we celebrate independence,
right.
And it's me, and I just take care of my own.
Right. And which doesn't work. I mean,
it works for some.
Well, but it doesn't, right?
But
it doesn't.
I mean, strong community.
Right. If you think about how we're situated right now, being separate, feeling like you're separate from people because you're exceptional or you're special or whatever, doesn't work for you, the individual, even though you may think it works.
Mm-hmm.
It does not work for you, the individual, because at the end of the day, if I look at Heather and mm-hmm. I say, I'm going to keep all of my marbles to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, Heather's going to reach out and say, hey, Barbara, do you have a marble or two I can borrow?
Mm-hmm.
And if I say to you, no, I'm keeping my marbles, the reality of it is I've now created harm for myself and for you, because I've now created this sense of lack because I'm keeping all my marbles. Right, which doesn't help any of us. And
yeah.
I know that's sort
and
of esoteric, but...
Well, and if you say, well, I'm keeping on my marbles, and say, well, then I have, and I know at some point we'll talk about workforce issues. If I have something, like I have, I'm trying to think, dice or something, or time, and you're like, okay, but I have a lot of dice, you have a lot of marbles. So, you know, it's like, you know, how can we work together? So, yes,
right.
We're getting... But there is this thing, I love this issue of... causing no harm as I move through people, and this sense of connectedness. And I've watched you for many years and community works build and strengthen the community, or try to,
mm-hmm.
and build that connectedness.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think sometimes people forget that, you know, humans, we have short memories.
I was going to say, change is hard and we have short memories.
That's right. Change is hard and we have short memories. And so, you know, some of the criticism that has been laid upon it. So I've been with the organization a little over 20 years.
And I am glad you said, I am
sure.
Interrupting real quick just
no,
to
okay.
catch up the audience, because I described your work as Community Works. But
right.
Community Works used to be known
as PTA Thrift Shop.
As PTA
Correct.
Thrift
exactly.
Shop. So
Correct.
Just making that linkage
right.
for people who
Correct.
Hadn't already. Just
right.
so we're all
Which
on
was,
the same page.
If you think about, you know, if you think about an organization's timeline and the length of an organization, most organizations, for-profit or nonprofit, don't live as long as this organization
That's
has,
great.
Right?
Oh, no.
They just don't.
I've been
right?
a weird source of not pride is I've been a part of, I think, 3 nonprofits that no longer exist.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They did
mm-hmm.
good work for
right.
10
for a
years,
period of time.
And they
right.
either it's because they had a real charismatic executive director and then that changed, mm-hmm. or the needs changed, but or they were taken over by something else. But Yeah, the fact that you've been around for 73 years is huge.
Wow. Well, and you don't do that if you don't make some changes along the way, right? If you don't meet, and I always say, you meet the community in the moment where it is.
Don't try to
continue something that has, one could argue, outlived its usefulness and its sustainability in an effort to say, to look back and say, you know, this is the thing that we created and we're going to continue it into perpetuity. Because at the end of the day, nonprofits exist, for better or for worse, to serve the community, the community's needs, and where the community is at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's on a sort of on a micro level. On a macro level, nonprofits are ever evolving.
Yes.
Right? What was how we moved 5 years ago before COVID is not how most of us are moving now.
Right.
Yeah.
Never mind those nonprofits that no longer exist because COVID took them out.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so if we're not clear about what our overall mission is, right? I mean, each organization has its mission, but if we're not clear what the overall mission is of the nonprofit sector, and I will say, as much as I love the sector, I have a lot of criticism around the sector, and mm-hmm. that's a conversation for mm-hmm. potentially another day.
Yes, and offline. And I mm-hmm. spend a lot more of my time now not in the nonprofit. I mean, I'm
sure.
about half and half, so half in the nonprofit sector and half not in. And it is
well,
interesting.
Well, and I will say, just as a side note, it's not a criticism of the work that the nonprofit sector does. It's a criticism of how we're situated and the need for nonprofits at all. Whereas when you look at European countries and other sort of quote unquote first world countries, nonprofits don't exist in the same way that they do here. Hmm. Nonprofits exist in a more global way
mm-hmm.
in other countries. The reason they don't exist in that way here is because we have gaps
in
services.
In the U.S., our nonprofit communities are our social safety net.
That's right.
Right.
It's
that's
part
exactly
of our
right.
– and I've been thinking about that a lot. I don't want to go down a rabbit hole, but I've spent a lot of time last week in meetings about concern about Medicaid cuts.
Yeah.
And about service provision to our more vulnerable community members. And I remember years and years and years ago when there was – some complications happening in our state, and one of our state leaders at the time met with us in the Aging Network, and we said, well, what's going to happen? What's the government's response? And their response is, this person said, well, the churches and the nonprofits are going to have to step up.
Right.
Hmm. And I thought, did a government leader just say that to me? Like the mm-hmm. government, that so anyway, that social mm-hmm. safety net, I could see why it needs to be so much stronger in the U.S., and that's fascinating mm-hmm. that it's different in Europe, which has a different kind of social
right,
contract.
Exactly. You're 100%
but
correct.
But it works there.
It does work there. And, you know, having spent time overseas and, you know, live in the U.S., there is a way that it could work here. But there are lots of things that would need to happen in order for
lots.
Right?
I'm lots.
Being
yes.
being kind around that. But
Yes, we're being
so
non-political.
Yeah, non-political about that. So all that to say, as far as, you know, community works and the evolution of the organization, I will say that, you know, we have – so I'm only the second executive director / president CEO of the organization in the 73-year history.
That's
simple math, but complicated math.
It is complicated math because it started off – and, you know, this is how nonprofits start, right? You see a need in the community.
It starts off as a collective.
Right. You see a need in the community, and well-meaning people get together and say, we're going to address that need, and then they go full on and address it. And so the organization was run by volunteers for a really, really long time.
Yes.
which worked
which
during
works
a per-
as long as That's you right. have super super engaged volunteers
mm, correct.
And then something
and
happens
then, well not only something happens but then the community there's a shift right so
right.
not only is there a shift in how individuals are situated but there's a shift in how the community actually operates and what the needs are long term in the community. And I always say, you know, when years pass and even recently, mm-hmm. people are still critical about the shifts that we've made mm-hmm. with the organization. And I would argue that, you know, it's about perspective. I love giving to organizations that are close to my heart, but I know that I only have that very narrow perspective. Regardless of how much research I do, I don't know all the ins and outs mm-hmm. of the organizations that I support. What I do know, though, is that the leadership and I include the executive director / CEO mm-hmm. and the boards, not only do they do the best, but they do the best with what they have, understanding how the larger landscape of not just the community, but also how nonprofits operate.
Mm-hmm.
And so people who have been critical of sort of our shift or whatever people want to call it, what I've said to folks is, you have one perspective, which is a valid perspective as a donor, as mm-hmm. a community volunteer. But those of us that are actually doing the work that are on the ground mm-hmm. every single day have a much broader perspective and trust that we understand what the community at any given time might be gravitating to, might need, and how the impact of the organization can be expanded during a time, not just now, but even 10 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever the thing is,
mm-hmm.
that we are trying to help people be whole in a very different way than we did 30 years ago, exactly. 20 years ago, because the needs are different.
Tell us about community works, because I know back in the day, it was more school.
It was in the classroom. That's right. It was very focused in the classroom, which was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? Which was very needed. I mean, I'm a huge, like, data nerd, and all things vintage. When I go back into the archives and I look at the very first letter that Olamé Fouché, who was one of the founders of the PTA Thrift Shop, when she wrote a letter to the superintendent that said, hey, you know, studies have shown that if you have art in the schools, children perform better, they mm-hmm. become better citizens, et cetera, right? And so that was a need at that time. But over the course of the 50 years before mm-hmm. before the slight shift, it made sense to be able to fund things that were inside the classroom, right? Mm-hmm. It made sense to do that. But it also wasn't based on equity, quite frankly, right? It mm-hmm. didn't take into account that there were loads of students loads of youth and families who might not be able to access the resources that were being mm-hmm. put into the school district. Nothing wrong with the original intent.
Right.
Because it was designed to close an opportunity gap.
Yes.
Right? And we're still doing that. We're mm-hmm. still closing opportunity gaps. But the gaps are bigger. Right? I mean, the gaps are bigger.
Right.
The need
right.
is bigger.
I love that focus. Because even I've been sort of adjacent to it and mm-hmm. watching it for years.
Sure.
But I love that focus on closing an opportunity gap
mm-hmm.
as opposed to what maybe people thought it was to support what's happening in classrooms.
Correct.
But the original intent was to close an opportunity mm-hmm. gap.
Right.
Like Sesame Street, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole other
thing. That's true. That's
and then it
true. Yes.
turned into a different focus.
Right.
But, okay.
Right.
So then moving into how you're doing that now or how it looks
sure,
now.
Sure, sure. So kind of a quick history lesson. So we were PTA Thrift Shop until middle of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that, and interestingly enough, the board had been talking about changing the name probably 10 years before that.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't quite seem like the right time. And at the middle to the end of 2019, there were some things that took place, and so it seemed like the right time to do it. The name, the board came up with a name in the matter of an hour, if you can believe that, right? It was just that quick. And the reason it was just that quick is because we had created a program in 2016 that was called Youth Works on Main.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Youth Works on Main was designed to – actually, it was designed to create some additional revenue for the organization, right? That was one part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also – we saw a need in the landscape and so I've been in the nonprofit sector for over 20 years. And one of the things that I had always said was, there's got to be a way that in the for-profit sector, you have these opportunities for startups and,
yes.
and organizations that are in kind of the first 5 years of mm-hmm. their life cycle.
Those innovator hubs.
That's right.
I had a meeting
right.
this
exactly.
morning about these incubators.
That's right. Who are either on in incubators or accelerator mode, and who just need not necessarily cash, but who need to have their infrastructure costs reduced.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So at the time, YouthWorks on Maine was the concept had lived in my head for a really long time. And a wonderful, wonderful executive director who is now the executive director of Book Harvest, Tabitha. I don't know if you...
I have not met her,
I know
Book Harvest.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So Tabitha is amazing. Tabitha was the executive director of Youth Forward. And they were part of kind of this collective. They shared space with us at YouthWorks. And we got together and we said, is there an opportunity for us to collaborate in some way? And she had actually created a logic model of YouthWorks.
I love a good logic model.
Logic
Go on.
Model.
And I will say that the minute she showed it to me, I was like, oh, my God. Tabitha, this is what's been living in my head, but not on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really how YouthWorks on Maine got started, right? We wanted to create an opportunity to help organizations build capacity, especially those organizations that had been doing work for years, right? Call it 5 years,
mm-hmm.
some longer than that, some shorter than that, but who couldn't scale because they didn't have the right infrastructure, the right, people around them, whatever the thing was that
mm-hmm.
was missing. So we said, okay, let's figure out a way to do that. So we built YouthWorks on Maine. It was based on a tenancy and membership model, and it still is.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was to provide the support so that organizations did not have to spend. Because the three things that are the most costly for organizations, nonprofit organizations,
mm-hmm.
are the people.
Yep.
And the place where they do their work.
The rent, yes,
right?
Or owning, yeah.
Right? And then, that's just the two. Those are the two main
the
ones.
People and the place.
Yeah, the I would say those are the two big things. And so we were trying to figure out, okay, so how can we lessen that load? And I will tell you, within probably the first year, we saw that if you cut out the cost of where you live,
mm-hmm.
and organizations don't have to worry about their lights being turned on or
mm-hmm.
off. They're not worried about space. They're not worried about, whatever the thing is we all worry about as
mm-hmm.
far as infrastructure goes. You actually can focus on your mission, and you can increase the three things that we were measuring, and those are programmatic scope, does it increase?
Mm-hmm.
Budget, does it increase? And staff, does that number change?
Mm.
And within that first year, we saw an increase of almost 100% for every organization that was part of YouthWorks on Maine.
Hmm. And for those who aren't familiar, it's because the big picture, the logic model came to life because there was property right next to the PTA Thrift.
Right. Oh,
so,
sorry. Yes.
So that's a key part of it.
Just,
so you were able to
that.
Get a building
so, yes,
to provide this accelerator
and
hub.
Thank you, Heather.
No problem.
Mm-hmm. Because, so the organization bought part of the property in 1978. And there's, so in 1978, and there's this wonderful picture in the paper, in the archives that has... Is it Jonathan Howell, who was the former...
Howe, I think.
Yeah.
Is it Howe? H-O-W-E?
He was at Carol Woods,
yeah.
And he was the former mayor of Chapel Hill. And
yes.
he's since deceased, but he was a lovely, lovely individual.
Yes.
Anyway, there's a picture of him at the building at 125 West Main now, but it was 101 Jones Ferry Road.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so that was when the organization purchased... that first piece of property, and then in 1989 they did a rehab, they added a little bit in the back, and they bought what's now the parking lot,
mm-hmm.
and then in 2010 when we built YouthWorks on Maine, we purchased an adjacent property,
mm-hmm.
right? And so over time, yes, we had the opportunity because we had the property.
Yeah.
And the capital expansion happened because of the recession. So imagine that all of your eggs are in one basket and your only revenue stream is reliant on people bringing you stuff and then you selling it. Mm-hmm. And then a recession hits and people who don't feel comfortable giving you their toaster are hanging on to their toaster, mm-hmm. but you still have people who want to buy the toaster.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so that's what happened to us during the recession.
Interesting.
Right? And so the board got, obviously we got out of the recession and the board was like, okay, it's not sustainable just to have the one revenue stream. How do we
diversify?
That's right. How do we diversify? Right. How do we create more capacity for ourselves as an organization? And so what did we have a lot of? We had property. Mm. And so we maxed out the footprint of the property. And what you see down the road is that maxing out. I guess
that way. For Youth Works on Main.
Right. And so it's 27,000 square feet. So 22,000 of it houses the thrift shop, houses the thrift piece. So
which
donations
I love
shopping in. Right. Mm-hmm. Donations in the retail.
And donating too.
And then we, thank you. And we have on the third floor office space.
Oh.
And then across the parking lot is about 4,700 square feet, and that is the Youth Works on Main building.
Hmm.
And so that's why when there was discussion about rebranding, you already had Youth Works.
So we had Youth Works, and so the board was, we did the whole exercise, with the
Who
sticky
are
notes.
We? What are we? Yeah, flip charts and sticky notes back in the day. Yeah.
And within the hour, a couple of board members said, well, why don't we just call it Community Works?
There you go.
Yeah, right? Great name.
And it was born.
And so if you go on our website, there's this really great little video, and Charles DeBose, who's our VP of Assets and Infrastructure, is narrating the video. And at the end, he says, we've weathered many storms and something else. And then he says, because that's how community works.
Oh, I like that. I just stopped all the writing. Mm-hmm. I didn't click on videos. Yeah. I'll go back and watch that.
And so that's how. So, and I will also say, one of the reasons, not just the diversifying of the business model to include lease-up space and, Youth Works on Main, because we're not a direct services organization, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're a catalyst for change.
You're direct service when it comes to toasters, but that's not a service.
Right, but that's not a service. But, retail. We don't address food insecurity. We don't address housing insecurity per se. We try to partner with folks who do that, and then we figure out a way to support their work, right? Mm-hmm. And so, oddly enough, this idea of closing an opportunity gap, that's the opportunity gap, right? Figuring out a strategy to, how do you, for an organization that has as many resources as we do and has for many, many years, how do you deploy those resources into the community in the appropriate way? And by resources, I don't just mean stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I also mean work, right? Mm-hmm. So we have a workforce development component whereby we hire people who are looking for ways to not only bring value to where they work, but also bring value to themselves, which is challenging, right? If you're, if you are situated in a way where you're in recovery or you have been affected by the carceral system in some form or fashion, or you have some sort of mental, challenge that you're trying to navigate, and you can't find an employer who's willing to work with you in that regard.
Yeah, options are limited.
Right, your options are limited. And so that's an opportunity gap, right? I mean, that's a way for us to, to work with people who could thrive under the right circumstances. And then the Youth Works on Main piece is the youth and family component, again, helping organizations who work with youth and families to help them thrive.
Yeah, I was just thinking before, and I scribbled down, you raise up the capacity of organizations to raise up the experiences and opportunities
for our youth and for other adults.
Right.
So, and I do have, again, from the stalking, I was looking at you work to tackle big social issues, and I think you've talked about these and the social issues impacting the Chapel Scarborough youth and families by investing in, number one, creating solutions for youth development, developing workforce training to equip adults to achieve their career goals. You spoke about that. Providing affordable space through YouthWorks for youth-centric organizations, and granting and capacity building for area nonprofits. Is, with the exception, you tell me, I'll find my words to ask that. With the exception of the adult workforce options, are most of your other programs youth-centric, focus on, and because that's still part of your original mission,
correct,
which is closing the opportunity gap
for youth.
For youth.
Right, right. So, you know, the idea, and again, you know, the idea of putting, of being classroom focused worked at a particular time. But sort of if you think about it, when your parents are whole, or when the person that is raising you is whole, you have a much better experience and opportunity as a young person to also be whole, right? So it doesn't make sense just to attach to the youth piece necessarily and forget the fact that, you know, if my mom, my dad, my grandmother, or whoever's raising me doesn't have a job, then, you know, there's no economic stability, which means that I can't grow into the person that I need to grow into. So I would say that, yes, our programming is focused on around youth, but it's youth and families, because when you have healthy families, you have healthy youth, which means you have a healthy community. Right? And so our focus is, and that's why, you know, the organizations that we partner with, so we have about 25 partners that, you know, and some of those partnerships are very deep, and they're partnerships that will last, you know, have lasted for years. And then there are other partnerships that may be a one-off because there's an opportunity gap that needs to be closed. We've figured out a way to support whatever that organization is doing, and then they go off and do their good work, and, you know, we wish them well, right?
So these 25 partners, so some of them literally have space, I'm assuming, in YouthWorks?
Correct.
Or do they all 25 at some point pass through the doors?
And no, so there are organizations that we, so I'll use the example of Orange County Rape Crisis Center, right?
Okay.
Their work is phenomenal. But we all know that they had a really, there was a challenge for them a few years ago based on funding cuts, et cetera. Right?
I just know that they had a different space and then a location, and then they didn't. So
right.
I did not realize the link between Orange County Rape Crisis and Community Works. Go on.
Well, so another great, we came to it kind of late, right? So we reached out to their leadership and said, hey, if you need space, if you have a need, come talk to us. We'll figure out some sort of strategy. And so when their building was being renovated, they lived with us, quote unquote, temporarily for a few months. And again, that is a short term, you know, that was a short term partnership, but we consider them now to be part of the YouthWorks on Main family. Right, because it was a short-term partnership, but it developed. That's right. And we said, hey, if you need gift certificates for your clients, if there's anything that we can, you know, help with, we're happy to do that. And so we're still connected to them, but again, it is not the same connection, but we still consider them to be a partner.
Well, because you're building capacity
right.
for different groups, or helping them strengthen or
correct.
Or grow their capacity, and then once that happens and they're good, it's like, go fly. Or continue to fly in that case.
Right, exactly.
That is so, okay, so then out of all the partners I thought you would name, that was not one of them that I would have thought about, but I think because I don't think about them from a youth perspective.
Right, and again, when you think about...
That was helpful.
Right, I would say most people don't think of them as a, you know, as an organization that
though I know they
on
would,
youth, but
they did educational work.
That's right. That's right. But they do.
So we are the Aging Well Together show.
Yes, we are.
And so I'd like to see, and I know you have done a lot in the aging space because that's how we met,
right.
As part of your volunteer work. I did notice something, and with a little editorialness, but I do love on your website where it talks about the Community Works belief and vision statement, and it reads, Communities built on equity and collaboration enable youth to reach their full potential. Mm-hmm. And a community where youth and families have equitable access to resources and opportunity. A community where youth and families have equitable access to resources and opportunity. That was part of the vision. What struck me was, not that you would do this, but we could swap out youth and replace it with older adults.
Sure.
And I think that's the passion of this show and the Orange County Department on Aging. You know, a community built on equity and collaboration enable older adults to reach their full potential, mm-hmm. and a community where older adults and their families have equitable access to resources and opportunities. So I was like, I love that. And then, not that I'm changing your mission from youth to older adults, but I know that that has also been work. And I am curious about the intersection.
Absolutely, that, sure.
That you have done both personally, professionally, mm-hmm. voluntarily, mm-hmm. I just made up a word, and anything that may link with community works. I mean, I see older adults working at community works.
Yeah.
I see folks
so
shopping.
We have, at any given time, you know, we've had, and of course, I earlier I said I was a data nerd, and now I'm going to go back on that because I don't remember the statistics. But
it's all right.
I'll use my leadership team. There are six of us, and the majority of us are 50 and older.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There are three of us that are in our 60s. And so we're part of that that generation,
mm-hmm.
right,
yes.
of older, quote-unquote, adults.
Mature.
Right, mature adults.
Well-seasoned.
Well-seasoned,
as I
yes.
like all of us here.
Or well-heeled.
Well-heeled or well-tar-heeled.
That's right, well-tar-heeled. And we've had folks who've worked with us as line staff who've been, Miss Gracie was probably in her early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mid to early 80s. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, for us it's more about, you know, if you're engaged in the work,
mm-hmm.
if you like the work that we do, you know, why should we keep you from doing it just because you are of a particular season?
Hmm.
Again, that intergenerational piece of, you know, how the interconnectedness doesn't stop at age. It, you know, it we're all connected,
mm-hmm.
and intergenerationally we live that out, right?
Mm-hmm.
When because you learn from people who are older than you learn from people who are younger.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's been really interesting. And I personally, you know, it's funny. I don't really, when I think about, you know, I was born in 1963. And by the way, so.
Yes.
This
I feel
is
like
a,
something fun's about to come.
Yes.
Like, by
63,
the way.
53, what's the difference?
So this is a side note, which is very interesting. So, you know, we're considered, those of us that were born in before 1965,
baby boomers.
Are considered baby boomers.
Right.
However, that's not accurate.
Boomers, go on.
We're closer to being Gen X because
yes.
of how, right. But there is now a Generation Jones that encompasses those of us that were born between 1958 and 1965.
Generation Jones. Why is
you
it called?
Said, right.
And this is my
so
one of my sisters.
I will tell you.
Two of us are Gen X. One is baby boomer, and it's kind of a weird yes.
So I will tell you, it is based on the keeping up with the Joneses, right?
Yeah.
Which was big in the 70s,
That's right.
So I went down a whole rabbit hole when I saw that on social media, and
I'm
I was like,
be looking this up
right.
tonight and sending.
So
to my
there
right.
were these examples of what makes Generation Jones, Generation Jones, and I was like, that's us.
Yes, because it's not the boomers. You know, some people don't love baby boomers. It was a much more non-authoritarian.
Right.
By the Vietnam War. About
uh-huh.
It was just a different sort of things that imprinted. And the later part of the baby boomers,
mm-hmm. we were the Jones.
That's not us. That's right.
We were looking at the stuff on television.
Uh-huh.
We were trying to mock and imitate and mimic.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, how do you see that playing out now that?
The
Generation
have,
Jones
right.
is in a stronger position of leadership around the country
right.
because of just that's who's running groups. Just like Gen X, we're tiny. We're 40 million to the baby boomers,
mm-hmm.
80 million and the millennials, 80 million. But they're like, we're all coming into our own because we're now of the age where we can be the
The leaders.
The leaders, right. The historians, mm-hmm. that, like, there's not a lot of us, but we're more content focused. Sure. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's interesting because our generation, we were the original sort of latchkey kids, right?
Yes. I
remember as a I hate to even say this. Well, my mother's dead, so it doesn't really matter. I don't guess, and my father doesn't.
You're gonna see a bird.
Right. So as an seven and eight year old, having a key around my neck, walking myself home from school, going inside, making a sandwich, and doing my homework. Right. That identify and going out and playing until
back by 10. It was, remember, it's 10 o'clock, do you know where your children are?
Right. That's right.
My husband, who's not too many years different than I am, but we had different childhoods, he's like, you were just raised with blind neglect.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, yeah. He just came home at 7, exactly, made a sandwich, put on Mickey Mouse in General Hospital, and
I mean, we were out all the time, right? And so, on a military base,
was that different?
Well, I mean, my mother worked, my father worked. So, we, during the summer, we would go on what they call the economy, which was off base. Ah. And you could get into all kinds of, I won't say trouble because,
activities.
Activities.
Events.
Activity events. So all that to say is that back to your original question.
We weren't on our phones all the time. Wow. Right. We weren't always doing the best things.
Right. We were
exploring.
And now, I need to know where my children are all the time.
Right. We were grown up before.
Yes.
Before we hit puberty to some degree, right?
There
was a level of independence.
Right, and responsibilities.
So, I'm trying to bring it all back around. That's right. Are there nonprofits that you wished existed then or that you're happy? There's a link there between our blind neglect that we were all raised in. And some people say, we survived. But the truth of the matter is some people didn't.
Right.
And so what exists now that we're excited about? Or it is such a different time.
It is. But, I will say that one of the things that I'm appreciative of being in this age group is the fact that I'm going to generalize because it's not everybody, obviously, but I think we look at the world in a very multifaceted way, right? We look at the world intergenerationally. So we take into account that older folks can teach us just as much as younger people do, which you can't say that about every generation, right? I think baby boomers have a more narrowed view about what that looks like. And even, millennials have, I would say younger Gen X and millennials also have a very different view potentially as to what that looks like.
Interesting.
I think our generation, because a lot of us grew up overseas, our worldview was different because of all the things that were happening at the time, how we were situated. And every generation has that, so I'm not taking anything away from that. But I think for the people that I'm connected with that are in my generation, we look at the world slightly differently because our experiences were based on almost hyper independence, right? As children, we were sort of feral. I mean,
that's exactly my husband has used that term. I'm going to go home and say that's exactly
Which and to some degree, we laugh about it, but that gave us the muscle to move into situations and move through situations that generations before us and generations after us may not have handled as well, right?
There's an adaptability I see with, with my children who are 23 and 19. their adaptability, their feralness, if you will, is now online in the sense that they can navigate technology. They can move with the changes in a way. So, in the interest of time, we have 4 minutes left.
Oh,
no, this is so fun. And we have not been able to have a good existential conversation in a while. We need to have those more. We love those. We live in the gray space of tangents and side things because we love it. I want to make sure, though, you have the mic and to talk about anything you want to make sure that you share about with Community Works and any asks that you may have in terms of, do you need volunteers?
Sure.
I'm sure you always want donations, but this is your time to make sure that anything you wanted to say has been shared.
Sure. I appreciate that. Yeah. It's funny. As the CEO, I I'm supposed to be good at asking for things, right? Which is kind of funny.
I did that when our friend Rachel Bierman was on with Meals on Wheels.
Oh, I love like, Rachel.
Love
oh
Rachel. And I was like, don't you want to ask for volunteers? She's like, yes. And donations, yes. So I'm like, don't you want to ask for something?
So I would say continue to support the organization as it is today and as it continues to move forward. I mean, the last 5 years have been extremely difficult for the organization, right? Mm-hmm. We lived through COVID. The fact that we are still around
is something to celebrate.
Is something to celebrate. The fact that we did not have to cut our workforce because of COVID, that's huge. Mm-hmm. And so I would, you know, not a lot of people know that, but I would say continue to support that work. Continue to mm-hmm. support the folks that you run up, you know, that are taking the donations, that come in, you know, that are behind the cash register. If you interface with any of the organizations at YouthWorks on Main, can you continue to support us with either your financial donations? We always love financial donations. Mm-hmm. We love, you know, when people, I love it when people call me and say, you know what, I don't shop there anymore because I've whatever, whatever, mm-hmm. but I want you to have $100. And nice. I'm so appreciative of that because that means that you're still part of our family. Mm-hmm. You're still interested in what we're doing.
Right. Support. The support is.
And then, the other plug I will make is there, unfortunately, is a lot of misinformation just generally in life.
Yes.
And I'm always happy to, you know, I'm very transparent. I don't, you mm-hmm. know, I don't live outside of that transparency. I try to be transparent because the organization doesn't belong to Barbara. Mm-hmm. It belongs to the community. So I'm happy to share whatever legally I can share and, you know, give context. And so if there's misinformation, if there is a question about what we're doing, please contact me.
Which is a great time with our last 10 seconds to do a website shout out, or how would they contact
you? Yes, so you can contact me through our website. Mm-hmm. We are CommunityWorksNC.
Oh, another NC, CommunityWorksNC.org. And we have to spell out Community Works. It's W, because even in my,
that's
I kept
true.
Getting
it is, it is the word community and then works with an X. So W-O-R-X.
Yes. And autocorrect didn't like that when I was, even when I was texting you, Alicia, about the show. So it's CommunityWorksNC.org.
And then you can go to About Us and you'll see my picture with my email.
And your bio. That's how I was able to stalk mm-hmm. you. I hate that I have to stop this.
Okay.
I have the buttons in front of me. Barbara Jessie Black, president and CEO of Community Works and just an amazing community volunteer and leader. Thank you so much. Alicia Reed, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
WCOM, thank you so much for hosting us in one of our last shows in this studio. I know, right? OCDOA, Orange County Department on Aging, for being our amazing sponsors. And always, listeners, thank you. We are here for you, and we look forward to joining you next week.
Thank you.